Back in December, myself and some of my family had the chance to go to a December college graduation ceremony. Some dear family friends were celebrating with their daughter, who was graduating with a nursing degree, and we were there to support them and to celebrate with them. Now, if you've been to an academic ceremony, and specifically a graduation, you know that there are lots of pageantries, lots of formalities, lots of speeches, lots of words of wisdom, lots of thanking of people, and of course, the handing out of the degrees and the awards. And in those settings, it can be difficult to pay attention to all the speeches and all the accolades and all the words of advice that are offered. But there was one particular student who at this particular graduation ceremony, he caught my ear and caught my attention. The primary student who had been chosen to give the speech on behalf of the student body was a young man named Enoch. Now, Enoch was a pretty funny guy. He truly spoke his mind. There was really nothing off limits in his sharing, and I appreciated his authenticity. Now, when Enoch began his speech, this is what he said. He said, "Not to toot my own horn, but I remember when I came here to this institution. I thought I was somebody. I had graduated in high school at the top of my class. I was a three-sport star, and I was musically proficient. I was somebody." Then he says, "I came here to this institution, to this college, and not very long after being on campus, I met another Enoch." Now, first of all, what are the odds of that happening? And he said, "That Enoch was taller, smarter, handsomer, and better in me than in so many ways. In fact, they called me Little Enoch compared to him." Then Enoch, the speaker, said this, "Man, I could not wait for that guy to graduate." Now, why did Little Enoch, why was he so excited for Bigger Enoch to graduate? Well, it's pretty obvious, right? He didn't want to have to be reminded every single day that he was Little Enoch compared to the other Enoch. I love the honesty and the vulnerability that Enoch was willing to share with us in his graduation speech, because Enoch's experience is not just limited to him, is it? All of us have that same kind of experience. Even though it seemed like Enoch had it all when he came to campus, and he did. He was intelligent, he was well-liked, he was athletic, he was musically proficient. He had a very hard time being content in the presence of Big Enoch. Why? Because as Andy Stanley frames it, we all tend to live in the land of Ur. And you know what I'm talking about. Enoch described it perfectly in his speech. Someone who's handsome, tall, sexy, better, faster, rich, thin, whatever the might be for us. If you've been with us since the start of 2024, you'll remember we're beginning this year by focusing on the idea of contentment and the issue of contentment. And if you're wondering why are we starting the year off in this way, it's because in reality, we are all tempted to live in the land of all the time. And when we live in the land of we're never content, because there will always be someone who has more, is doing more, is more in some regard always when we compare ourselves to them. There will always be someone who's more than you, hip-er. Talented-er, the boyfriend or girlfriend is pretty-er, or again, rich-er, smart-er, fill in the blank. And the way we often compensate for this is usually to look around then and compare ourselves to someone who's somehow less-er in our lives so that we can feel superior-er. And then some of us don't want to be an-er at all. We want to be an-est. We want to be pretty-est, smart est, healthy est, retweeted est, which reminds us of what the great author C.S. Lewis once said when he defined the issue of pride. He said, "Pride gets no pleasure out of having something, only out of having more of it than the next person." In other words, living into the reality of I think that is so true. For Adam and Eve, they had to be more than God. They wanted to be freer compared to God. And until finally they disobeyed God, it was the Ur that got them. Think about it. They had tons of freedom in the Garden of Eden. They had very few restrictions. Life was so good. They had named the animals. They literally walked creation with God in the garden. They communed daily with God with no problems, and yet it was somehow not enough. And they got to a place where they were not content. Why? They wanted more. They wanted to live in the land of Ur. And so part of what we discover is that contentment is never found in the land of Ur. There is never any win in comparison. It will always leave us wanting. And that's why, as I had mentioned a few months ago, comparison is the thief of joy. And I think today we could also say that comparison is the adversary of contentment. Comparison is what puts the dis in discontentment. Or looking at it in the framework of Scripture, we could say that this comparison, this land of Ur, it always leads to the sin of envy. We hear it this way in the Old Testament. If we go to the book of Exodus, chapter 20, verse 17, we hear, "You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or his male or female servant, his ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor." And the Message version makes this even more clear when it says, "No lusting after your neighbor's house or wife or servant or maid or ox or donkey. Don't set your heart on anything that is your neighbor's." I appreciate how Pastor Clay Stauffer says it, and he points out the irony of hearing God tell us not to covet our neighbor's house when in reality, that's pretty much the setup of our current culture. We live in a culture with an economic system that to some degree fuels itself on coveting. Are we not told over and over and over again by marketers and advertisers that we deserve things that are bigger, better, nicer than what we currently have? Are we not told that we would be so much happier if we just went out and bought whatever it is they are promoting? Isn't the great American dream predicated on the idea of the fundamental concept of having a better life than the previous generation? We don't just want to give our kids what we have. We want to give them something bigger, better. And then we wonder why we're never, ever satisfied. We wonder why we are not content. It's hard to ever reach because it's always just beyond our grasp. Scripture is clear that we're simply not going to be content when we envy in the pursuit of when that's our constant reality. And I love the vivid description that we're given today in Proverbs chapter 14, verse 30, where it says, "A heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bones." Now, the reference to rotting here, it's not just a surface level issue. It's a referencing to a destruction of a person at the deepest level, even in their bones. So when we're discontent, there's very little that we can do to be at ease with ourselves. It's not just a matter of finding better food or nicer clothes or a few more dollars or a better house, because all of those fixes are surface level solutions. They might help us feel better for a short time, but certainly not in the long run. Inevitably then, the of discontent comes back. If we were able to sit down and have a conversation right now, where in your life would you identify What is a present source of your discontent? Might it be your job and how much you make? Is it around your weight or your looks? Is it around your athletic or musical ability? Is it around how much you accomplish or don't accomplish? Is it around something related to your kids or your family? Is it a constant comparison that you make with yourself compared to someone else in a similar life circumstance? What is it for you that's currently causing discontent? What, if left unchecked, is rotting your bones, your soul right now? For me, I've greatly struggled in the past when I've compared myself to other pastors and their successes, and I still struggle with this. There have been so many times when I look around what's happening among us in ministry, and I'm so grateful and I am so pleased because I see God moving in such significant and wonderful ways. And then I look at someone else. I look at another ministry setting, and I look what's happening there, and I feel my own heart sink. Now, nothing has changed in regards to what God is doing among us. God has been doing, God is doing great and amazing things, and yet my contentment is suddenly stolen when I enter into the land of and see what other pastors or other ministries are doing better than me. We know that discontentment fueled by comparison is very dangerous. It's truly cancerous to our soul. Why? Because it puts us on a very slippery path of progression, of moving forward in a very unhealthy way. Because here's what's happening. When we begin to compare ourselves to other, the first thing that's going to do is put us at odds with whoever we are comparing ourselves to. And at first, that comparison is only going to make us dislike them. At first, we're just annoyed by them. At first, we're just irritated by them. But then the rotting will grow and continue and get stronger. And over time, at some point, a shift will occur. And that shift in our soul with those that we're comparing ourselves to will shift from irritation to enemy. From dislike of that person or people to enemy. And once that happens, the shift will happen from just trying to ignore them or be irritated by them to wanting to get rid of them, to attacking them. And we'll start to create reasons against them, whoever them may be, on why they're not okay. And eventually, we'll convince ourselves that somehow then it's okay that since they're not okay, not only to just ignore them and put ourselves in some distance between us and them, but actually they, because they're now not okay, need to be gone and out of the picture completely. And our discontent will grow and rot us to the point that now not only are we not okay with them being somewhere off in the distance that we don't see, we have to get rid of them completely. And we see this over and over and over in our world. In our work world, it might be finding ways to put them down, or finding ways to put ourselves ahead of them, or maybe even finding a way to push them out. In social realms, this would involve things like bullying and excluding and ostracizing the thems, whoever they are. When it comes to one nation and another, it means one country eventually going to war against another, attacking them as enemies. Among races, this means one race seeking to elevate itself over other races. And among political establishments, it means eliminating other political groups as threats rather than finding ways to cooperate. The discontent leads to the rotting over and over and over. And the irony in all of this is that when it comes to being discontent, in the end, we are the ones not okay, not them. Because those folks are going to keep living their life. But we're the ones who are miserable because we keep comparing ourselves to them. Sometimes the them, whoever they are, might not even know that they're irritating us because they're just doing their thing and doing life. But we're the ones who are miserable because we are the ones who keep comparing, and it leads to discontent. It leads to rot. It leads to this moving away from contentment because we just keep focusing on them and living in the land of Proverbs chapter 14 was written by King Solomon. He was the wisest man who ever lived. He had absolutely everything, everything that you can possibly imagine from an earthly perspective. And yet he realized the whisper that we all have in the back of our minds and in our head when we start to think, look at them and what they have. Maybe I want that too. Even Solomon experienced this. There's no exceptions to this. It's not like we can ever be rich enough or good enough by the standards of this world that we will suddenly be content. We will always deal with the whispering lie that we need what they have, whatever that might be. And the irony is that they, whoever the they is for you, they actually have the same whisper and lie in their head, whispering the same thing. So it becomes a no-win situation. We're discontent looking at them. They're discontent looking at us, which is why Solomon once said, envy rots the bones. Now, none of us obviously want our bones to rot. So the goal, obviously, is to quit envying, to quit comparing ourselves to others so that we can find contentment. And we know that the more that we are consumed, the less margin that we have to give to that which we really want to support. Now, we know this is also easier said than done. I don't know how much of us can completely make it stop. It's very, very difficult to not compare ourselves to others. But we can absolutely make sure that this doesn't have control over our lives, or that we perpetually live into a state of discontentment by moving into the land of Ur. Well, how can we do that? Well, turn with me to the book of Ecclesiastes, because so far we have heard only from King Solomon in Proverbs chapter 14. And here he identifies the realities of a life that are not content, that idea of envy that leads to the rotting of the bones. But now look with me in Ecclesiastes chapter 4. We're going to look at verses 4 through 8. And at this stage, Solomon is now an old man. And he's done everything in life there is to do. He has literally done it all, had it all. There's nothing more that he could experience and have. And all of this life experience, Solomon is now downloading for us so that we can hear what his experience has been after having everything this earthly world has to give to us. And what, as he's downloading this to you and I, what does Solomon tell us? First, that this struggle for finding contentment is not new. Solomon looks around and he realizes that everyone, absolutely everyone, was determining where they were in life based on their perception of what others had compared to them. And then Solomon says it this way in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 4, "And I saw that all toil and all achievement spring from one person's envy of another. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind." Now, catch that last phrase. After all your toil, after all your comparison, after all your effort, what is it that it gets you? A chasing after the wind. In other words, it is pointless. It's endless. Where does the wind stop? It doesn't. Wind never stops. There's no finish line for the wind. It just goes and goes and goes. So Solomon is telling us that all of your chasing and all of your comparison, it's just going to keep going. You never reach the finish line. You never come to a healthy conclusion and resolution. And because we all have this drive to compare ourselves to others, we'll never quite get there, wherever there is. And so we're just going to keep going and going and going. It's all just beyond our reach. It's all striving after the land of forever. So that dissatisfaction is guaranteed. A lack of contentment is guaranteed. So the envy and comparison, again, puts the dis in the discontentment because it steals from our accomplishments and what we have done and what we've gotten to experience. So here's one thing that I want to suggest for us here today. The next time we catch ourselves looking to get into someone else's lane, the next time we start to dwell strongly in the land of I want to invite us to recognize what's happening. And the next time we even start to say it to ourselves, oh, I wish I had hair like that. I wish I had skin like that. I wish I had a home like that. I wish I had a job like that. I wish I had money like that. The next time you find yourself starting to move into the land of literally stop yourself and just say, realize that is a chasing after the wind. And then say to yourself, and I don't chase the wind. Because there's no wind. You can say it in your head, but honestly, wherever you are, when that happens, you might want to say it out loud. In fact, I invite you to say it out loud. That's a chasing after the wind, and then literally say, and I don't chase the wind. And I don't chase the wind. Why? Because there's no wind in it. Your life is too valuable to go chasing after the wind. And notice, according to Solomon, this idea of seeking contentment, it's not just about letting things go. It's not just about putting blinders on and ignoring other people. It's not about being passive. Look what we hear in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 5. Fools fold their hands and ruin themselves. It's the fools who do nothing. It's the fools who ruin themselves. So simply stopping, simply doing nothing, simply just accepting everything as it comes without any effort on our part, that's not the answer to contentment. So then what does Solomon say? He raises a tension for us. Ecclesiastes 4:6, better one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil and chasing after the wind. So what is Solomon doing here? He is saying, better one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil and chasing after the wind. He's raising a tension for us to avoid. And look what he's doing. First of all, he's saying, don't try to keep up. And he's also saying, don't give up. Those two extremes he's encouraging us to avoid. Contentment is marked by not trying to keep up and not giving up. Look how Solomon says it. First, he says, keep one hand of tranquility. That's Solomon's way of saying, quit striving with all that you've got all the time. Pause, rest. Now that rubs some of us the wrong way because we live in a culture that says use both hands all the time, strive to get more and more and more and more. Don't live like that, says Solomon. He says it's better to have one hand of tranquility. It's okay to pause after work. It's okay to pause after fulfilling your deeds for the day. You don't have to keep going with no end in sight. Pause and rest and be at peace. He says, you don't have to use both hands endlessly to chase after the wind. And notice, he doesn't say both hands of tranquility, he says one. We're supposed to keep working, we're supposed to keep doing, but not with both all the time, toiling endlessly. Your life is not defined by 30 years of two-handed toiling. Tranquility allows us to say, I'm happy for you and what you have. And what you have doesn't bother me. I'm content where I am. So keep one hand of tranquility in your life. Quit living with that two-handed toilness all the time. But also, says Solomon, don't not do anything. Don't do nothing. Remember, fools fold both their hands and don't do anything. So the answer to contentment is not both hands all the time, and it's not both hands none of the time. It's the one-handedness. We work, but then we also have a hand on tranquility as well. So then Solomon says to us in verse 7, again, I saw something meaningless under the sun. Well, tell us, Solomon, what did you see? Verse 8, there was a man all alone. He had neither son nor brother. There was no end to his toil. Yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. For whom am I toiling, he asked, and why am I depriving myself of enjoyment? This too is meaningless, a miserable business. In our current culture, we assume more is better. And that's what we've been taught. But chasing always leads us to more wanting. More leads to more. Bigger. Better. But it never ends. So Solomon raises a key question here that will help all of us learn to be content and make sense of what we're seeking to accomplish in our lives. And the key question that Solomon asks that I want us to focus on is this. For whom am I toiling? Really, who is that in your life? Think for just a moment. For whom am I working right now? For whom am I doing this anyhow? Many of us have forgotten to stop and ask this question. When was the last time you stopped and really asked deep in your soul, for whom am I doing this? For whom am I doing all this work and effort and toiling? Now, I'll admit to us, that's a hard question to try to answer. Because if you're really honest about it, who are you toiling for? Is it yourself and your comfort? Is it for a loved one? Is it for your family or for your kids? Is it all the toiling to try to live up to someone else's expectations? Is all the toiling for your boss or a coworker? Is it to look good in the eyes of other people? Is all of your toiling to impress your friends or to reach a certain status or to reach a certain level of achievement? Or is all of your toiling for God? The younger you are, the more time you have to live this out, but it never is too late to ask the question. Some of us are still trying to please mom and dad and get that hug of acceptance that we're still striving for, even if they passed away years and years ago. When was the last time we stopped and asked, why am I doing this? Whose approval am I competing for? For whom are you toiling? It's a difficult question. And I want to invite us at least to begin to wrestle with it. Because when we do, it's that question that will help us to start to release at least one of our hands from all the toiling so that we can have one hand of tranquility rather than two hands of constant toiling. The reality is this: if you're not content with your life, no one else will be. Not your kids, not your spouse, not the people you date, not your friends. No one else, because you're not content. And that discontentment will spill out into everything we do and all of who we are. The irony right now is that there are at least 500 million people in this world who would look at your life and consider you the most blessed and luckiest of people in the world. And yet you may not, because you don't know why or who you're toiling for. One handful of tranquility is so much better than two handfuls of endless working and angst. You'll never be content as long as you're always looking over your shoulder at the land of Ur. Because all that energy that we're expending looking over our shoulder is energy that God gave us for God's purposes. All that energy of looking over our shoulder, it's a chasing after the wind, and that chasing never ever ends. We can't win chasing the wind. It's an energy that rots our bones. But a heart of tranquility leads to contentment. So if you have to compare yourself to someone, compare yourself only to you. As author Jordan Peterson says, compare yourself to who you were yesterday, not to who someone else is today. There was a study done at Harvard about 75 years ago, and they tracked 268 male students who graduated from Harvard between the years of 1938 to 1940, so obviously men well into their 90s, in order to find out what makes for a happy and meaningful life over the long haul. Here's what they discovered. Among other things, they found that money and power, although important in achieving business success, did not necessarily equate to happiness unless those things were accompanied by things that bring us love, connection, and joy. And believe it or not, there's a number of lonely, discontented billionaires out there. In other words, they're discontent because they don't have a sense of purpose. They don't know for whom they are toiling. All their toiling in the world and all the money in the world did not lead them to more contentment. Theologian Stanley Hauer Wass and Will Willimon once said it this way: our problem as humans is not that we're full of desire, aflame with unfulfillment. Our problem is that we long for that which is unfulfilling. We attempt to be content with that which can never satisfy. What we want is power and status. Alas, we find that no matter what we have acquired, there's always someone else we envy. Contentment comes when we move out of the land of Ur and focus on that only which can satisfy, which is living in and for God the Father, and the living into who God has made us to be. Little Enoch, that I mentioned at the beginning of the sermon, as he neared the end of his speech that he shared with us, he made a shift by talking no longer about Big Enoch, but the shift occurred to giving gratitude to so many people. To his parents, to the faculty, to his fellow students, most of all to God. He ended his speech with gratitude, with contentment, because of the journey that he had been on, where he had made the shift that it was no longer about living in the land of Ur. It was living into who God had created him to be. He realized for whom he was toiling, and what it meant to be living into who God had made him to be. How about us? You only get one shot. Do not miss the life that God has for you by chasing the land of Ur. Live into contentment right here and right now. And when your emotions start drifting and you want to compare yourself with others and that starts to get the best of you, I encourage you today to stop and remind yourself and say to yourself, I will not chase the wind. I will not chase the wind. I will not chase the wind. Thanks be to God.